Welcome to the Gold Standard here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is Braden Gall, and you can get to me on Twitter.com, I guess, still, I suppose, at Braden Gall.
And I'm Michael Gallagher with Nashville Hockey Now. You can follow me on Twitter at MGSports_.
And I'm Emma Lingen with the Hockey News, and you can follow me on Twitter at Emma_Lingen.
We have a lot to discuss because the Nashville Predators are still collecting points literally every single time they step on a sheet of ice. 13-0-2, 15 consecutive games, tying a all-time franchise record of points in games. 13-0-2 is the record over the last stretch there since the 9-2 loss to the Dallas Stars. They just capped off an 8-goal performance with 7 straight unanswered goals against the San Jose Sharks. We are down to 13 games to go. They are 8 points up on the wild card spots. They have the first wild card spot locked in. We do have some injury news to get to in the defense corps in Barry Trotz's infinite wisdom. He has lots of depth there to handle it, but we'll get your thoughts on all of that stuff. Obviously, we've got some news on Roman Josi, award season, UC Saros, goal scoring, secondary scoring, all kind new contributors. What do we think about the guys that were added to the squad? I thought you guys, first of all, did a great job last week stepping in and handling all the trade deadline stuff. A ton of things like didn't happen, and I think most fans are okay with that. If you missed the analysis, of course, last week, please go check out that show. And, of course, check out It's All Your Fault from Jeremy Gover and the Nashville Scene in the Post. But I thought you guys did an excellent job. Way to go. Good work. Lots of stuff to talk about today.
Thank you. We tried.
Appreciate it. How was your vacation?
Yeah, speaking of last week, I think we need to talk about this.
I know you guys picked on Luke Shen a lot last week, so I don't want to do that this week. You guys kind of...
Why not? It's fun.
So let's just put it this way. Me and the wife and the 7 and the 5-year-old all went to the airport about 9 a.m. two Saturdays ago, and we stayed in our own beds that same Saturday. Then had to fly on a different airline to a different city than we were planning on going to. And then getting in a car to get to the location we had to get to, which ultimately was a place where you stand in line for hours. We went to Disney. As a Disney employee, I say this with all love and affection in my heart. It was fucking terrible. It was terrible. My kids loved it. My kids had a great time. They had so many memories. But I do not understand the concept of amusement parks, guys. I don't get it.
Wait, so what does this have to do with Luke Shen? Is it he's also fucking terrible? Or like what's the connection?
Well, I was
Luke Shen at Disney?
No, just you guys were picking on Luke Shen. I was going to make some sort of analogy about either below average defenseman or like not getting traded at the deadline, or I was going to come up, I was trying to come up with something quickly, and the only thing I could think of was how much you guys dogged on Luke Shen last week. So that was the only thing.
Out of love.
I know. And I took my kids to Disney out of love, purely out of love. No, I came back dumber, fatter, poorer, and more exhausted than I went. But my kids had a great time. So here I sit. Here I am. I'm back. And it is great to see your faces, by the way. It truly is.
You sound like me if I would have went to the U2 concert.
And paid more than $5.
Paid more than $5.
I'll tell you this. The Disney trip costs about as much as taking the entire Predators team to U2.
That I believe.
It's insanity. I'm serious. We went to the airport on Saturday to fly to Tampa on Southwest. No free shouts. We flew on Sunday to Jacksonville on Allegiant. That is what happened. And then we came back on time, thank God. But I am so glad to see the two of you and talk Predators hockey after an 8-2 win on Tuesday night. How about that?
I will say going to Disney, I mean, I say this as someone who doesn't have kids, but that does kind of sound miserable. It was miserable enough for me. This past summer, I went up to Buffalo for the NHL scouting combine and ended up, I think I had a flight booked to come back. I was supposed to go through like Baltimore or something, but I ended up getting done early. And so I changed my flight to an earlier flight. And my dumb self, I did not even think like, oh yeah, I'll take this earlier flight. The earlier flight connected through Orlando. And it was during the summer. And I was like, and the Orlando airport basically is an extension of Disney World.
It's huge.
And
it's huge.
And of course, it's Florida in the summer. So it was randomly storming like crazy. And yeah, that's, I will never make that mistake again.
So taking your kids to Disney is like, if the Preds had four straight road games, like double back to backs, but they've got to play at New Jersey on a Monday, at San Jose on a Tuesday, at Edmonton on a Wednesday, at Florida on a Thursday. But because they're 7 and 5 years old and had a great time, they went 4-0. But like, you get done and you're just like, what just happened? My body doesn't work. I'm exhausted. I don't know what happened to my bank account. It's just, it's nuts. It's nuts, but it was magical for them.
What an analogy.
For them.
That was well done.
That's a lot of flight. That's a lot of flying all over the country. okay. That being said, again, why is it so great to be here? A, I'm not in Florida. B, the Predators are technically as we speak and record this. But they just don't lose. 9-2. They played three terrible games coming out of the break. I think we said they needed to win two out of every three games. And they're at that point to kind of make the playoffs. And all of us said, that's going to be pretty hard to do. But anything that happens is sort of house money. Well, they've gone and done way above and beyond that. Again, 15-game point streak, 13-0-2 franchise record. And now have 40 wins on the season, which is just astonishing to say, thinking about what kind of conversations we were having following that three-game stretch coming out of the break, which was, again, a bad overtime win over Arizona, a terrible performance against New Jersey, and then a 9-2 loss at home against Dallas. They haven't lost a game in regulation since then. I just want to ask you quickly, why are they here, and why has this happened?
I think a large part is the goaltending. I mean, we were hating on the goaltending, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, and
not all of us.
Not all of us. Most of us collectively. but Saros and Lankinen really have just kind of been, I don't want to use the term unbeatable, but they really have, I don't know what's going on. I mean, the whole team really, but the goaltending, in my opinion, has really stuck out. And during that stretch, I mean, Saros has only had, what, two games where he's given up more than two goals? Everything else has been two goals, one goal. I think Kevin Lankinen's kind of been even keel the whole season, but I mean, I think how hot the team is and how well they played really kind of underscores just how well he's really played. And I mean, you have to go back a while to try to find like the last dud that UC Saros was involved in. And I think it was, when was it? Probably the beginning of January, the 5-3 loss to Anaheim, the 6-3 loss to Calgary. Since then, I mean, he's been kind of what we expected him to be at the beginning of the year. And maybe it's just chalk it up to the slow start, trying to get acclimated to the new system, what have you. But he's really settled in and played at a Vezina caliber level really over the last month, I would say. And I feel like that has been one of the biggest things. I think the other thing, too, and they all talked about this last night, is like they're having fun playing. They're enjoying things. Like the chemistry is finally there. They're all gelling. Like the offense is performing how the offense is supposed to. Same thing with the defense, same thing with the goaltending. They've really taken the coaching. And at the beginning of the year, I would say even up till probably the beginning of January, it just looked out of sorts. We couldn't really put our fingers on what it was, but you could tell something was just off with them. Now you don't get that sense at all. Like I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but I mean, they're playing like a top 10 team in the NHL. And I think it's time we start giving them a little bit more respect as, oh, they just got hot at the right time. Like they are playing like a top 10 team until someone comes in like Florida, who they play in their next game, and lays it to them. Like they did, like the Preds did to the Sharks last night. Like they're a top 10 team, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would agree about the goaltending, but to that, I would add, number one, Roman Josi is just superhuman. I mean, we say this all the time, which to that end, Andrew Brunette even said this earlier this week. You know, he's obviously been in the conversation for, you know, maybe Norris Trophy consideration, but now I don't think that he'll beat out Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, but I think that Brunette kind of made that point about like he's just been doing this for so long. He's not the shiny new toy anymore, so he almost gets overlooked. But what he brings to this team, the value he brings to this team. I mean, it's just, I marvel at it, honestly. Like, I think we are all lucky to be able to watch him play hockey because it's truly remarkable. And I would also throw in there the identity line of Michael McCarron, Kiefer Sherwood, and Cole Smith. You know, guys who you mentioned depth scoring, Braden, but I think it's not just about scoring. I mean, it's about the way they play the game, you know, how aggressive they are and how relentless they are. That's kind of been their catchphrase since, you know, in recent games. But I think that the way that line plays and they kind of bring everyone into the fight, and that, you know, it back to what Michael said, you know, that helps with the gelling and the chemistry and the tough to play against mentality. And I think everything's just kind of firing on all cylinders for them right now.
So I think, I mean, you asked when his last dud was, Michael. I mean, he gave up 4 in the first period and got pulled against Dallas. And I think, and he didn't play, I mean, he played well against New Jersey but they hung him out to dry in that game. So I would say the Dallas game is clearly a dud, because that was like the 4th or 5th time he got pulled. But UC Saros, .932 save percentage, 10-0-2. Yes, he is in fact leading the world in games started, because Lincoln has only played 3 of those games. He also won all 3 of them, obviously, but 10-0-2, .932. He still has the worst, even after that stretch, he still has the worst save percentage and goals against average of his entire career in terms of the season-long statistics. But his goals saved above average, according to NHL reference, he's moved up again. He's up near 7 now. Again, that was at like -5 a couple of months ago. He's now, so we're talking about a 12-goal swing. So it's clearly goaltending. I agree with you on Josi, Emma. I think he, if you look at the odds to win the Norris Trophy, Quinn Hughes is -450. Cale Makar's +350. But you only have to go down to 5th or 6th place before you find Roman Josi's name on a list of maybe like 7 or 8 guys, depending on what gambling app you use. He's on the list at +5,000, and he's moving up. So clearly what he's doing is being noticed by gamblers and therefore by the voters, hopefully. So I think all of that counts. I'll go a different direction because you guys both gave good answers, but I want to go with it's not secondary scoring, because even though that's part of it, they've averaged 4.3 goals per game in this stretch. They're now up to 11th in the NHL in scoring. So to your point, Michael, top 10 team, they're 13th in goals allowed. They are dominating people. Over this stretch, they've outscored their opponent 65-29. That's an average score of 4.3-1.9. And even against San Jose, where they were down 2-1, they scored 7 straight. Yes, it's San Jose. Does that count as a hockey team? I don't know. But they jumped out on Winnipeg 4-0. Like, they jump on people. And this is what I want to ask you guys. How much of this is the system taking root? And then the result of that system is, when we jump on people, it's really hard to come back on us, because our goaltender's finally playing better. But because his system is so aggressive and fast, it puts so much pressure on you, and it can keep you in your own zone. We talked about how much more time this team spends in the zone than the John Hines teams did on offense. So it's secondary scoring, but I think it's playing with a lead. They figured it out, and they figured out how to take the system and like pressure people to where you just can't make a comeback. I don't know if that, does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, I think absolutely. If you look at, like you said, the zone time and the possession time that they have, I think even using the San Jose game as an example, obviously they were trailing at one point in that game, but it wasn't just that they scored 7 straight, which, again, San Jose, and I'm not trying to be mean, this is like truly, it's up there with one of the worst hockey teams I think I've ever seen. It's honestly, I kind of feel bad for him. But anyway, not the point. The point is, I think, you know, and talking to the players after that game, you know, kind of saying like, hey, what was the turning point? Obviously, Jason Zucker scoring tied the game, and then it just took off from there. But it wasn't just that. I mean, they all mentioned the penalty kill also on Zucker's penalty in the second period there. And then how that really, it's those kind of, I don't want to, not intangible, that's not the right word, but maybe things that don't show up on the score sheet that are really fueling them and pushing them. And that's kind of when they all said, yeah, that's when we got back to our game, was after that. And like, I think one thing that we saw a lot earlier in the year and even further back with the John Hines teams is that this team did not know how to play from behind. They could, it's once they fell behind, that was it. And now you're seeing these pushes, or like maybe you might see a push, but it would be late in the third period and it would be too little too late. And now you're not seeing that. You're seeing not only a push, but a pushback with a vengeance like it was against San Jose. But I think it's things like that, that it's a mentality thing that, you know, it's something that you can't really teach. And I think it's something that this team has, it's taken them a while, but I think they finally figured it out.
And to your original question, I do think it is like the coaching is finally, they're taking to the coaching. The system is finally rounding out. And like there's just a switch that's been flipped. Like they get it. And I have a story, coming on National Hockey Now about this, but Michael McCarron mentioned last night that the third period has really become when they assert their will on other teams and they really take it to other teams. Beginning of the year, I mean, how many times do we talk about like, oh, another third period collapse. They blew another 2-goal lead in the third period. That was like the biggest weakness of this team. Now it's arguably their biggest strength. They get into a third period with a 1 or 2 goal lead and their foot is on the gas and they don't let up. Somewhere along the lines, and maybe no one on the team can really like put their finger on it, maybe that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but somewhere along the line that mentality that Emma was just talking about like stopped, and now they have a different mentality of like, we're not playing from behind in the third period, we're not chasing other teams, like we have the lead, we're going to go out there and we're going to play like it. And that's to me what has been one of the biggest things that I've noticed just in the last, you know, ever since the All-Star break, basically, except for the, you know, the three bad games right out of the gate. And I think something else too, to your point about like the coaching is just finally, they're taking to the coaching. I think the Predators are fourth in the NHL in time spent with the puck in the offensive zone. And they have the third fewest time in the NHL with the puck spent in the defensive zone. That's, to me, that's Andrew Brunette's system right there. If you want to know what is Andrew Brunette all about, playing with the puck in the offensive zone as much as you can, with the puck in the defensive zone as little as you can. And I think that we're finally seeing everything he was trying to get them to do the first 2.5 months of the season. Finally, it's all making sense. It's all click. I don't know what you want to call it, but they're finally executing to the way that he was kind of wanting them to at the beginning of the year.
It's also unfair. And it's not even like a coach or a player or anyone's fault. Like, it just takes time for a young developing team and a brand new coach to sort of like find themselves into the right places. And I wish I had the numbers in front of me. I don't have the numbers in front of me at the All-Star break of what this team was, but I could have sworn we've spent many conversations on this show talking about how, yeah, the Preds are outscoring their opponent in the first period, but they're getting destroyed in the third period. They currently on the season have scored 80 goals in the third period. Their opponents have scored 70. So they're now plus 10. In the third period. And I want to say that was a large negative number for the vast majority of the season.
They were minus 21 up until into the middle of November, I believe.
Minus 21. Wow. So here's a couple other numbers. After the second,
maybe middle of December, by the end of the year, they were minus 20 something. It was bad.
After two periods, the Predators are 28-4-1 with a lead, which is actually about right. Most teams win going into the third period with a lead at a pretty high rate. They are only 3-17 when they're trailing. So you can see the numbers, right? So it's about, you win a vast majority of the time. I think there's a big difference in total situations there, right? Only 20 times have they trailed going into the third period, and 33 times they are leading going into the third period. That means they're winning the first and second periods. But here's the other one. When they are tied, they are 9-4-3, which means in those 14 or 15 games, 12 of them, they didn't lose. So when they're going into third periods tied with a team, they're winning or getting a point a vast majority of the time. So whether that's learning how to finish or, you know, again, I think playing with the lead has been a big deal in this 15 game stretch.
Yes, you're right.
Good job. I thought I was supposed to be the one who disagrees with everybody. I thought that was supposed to be my role. That's what I learned on last week's episode. So
I was trying to sit here and think of like, do I have anything to counter that? But I don't. You're right. Go you.
So here's a couple other notes real fast. According to Money Puck, it's not the end all be all, but just according to Money Puck on from at least 100 minutes, the lines, the second secondary scoring, as we would call it, right? The Sherwood, McCarron, Smith line right now is the 12th rated line in all of the NHL based on X goal percentage. So that's, I believe that's your expected goals for versus your expected goals against. 65%, just as a note, Draisaitl, McDavid and Hyman are number 10 at 65.3%. So that's where they're putting Sherwood, McCarron and Smith. And of course,
so what I'm hearing is the Preds' bottom line is almost as good as Edmonton's top line. That's what I just heard.
And 13th in the NHL. So 12 and 13 are the Preds. Jankowski, Novak, Evangelista, which of course is what they deployed on Tuesday night against San Jose. So I think, and have for a long time now, those two lines from a metric standpoint have been extremely good.
That just reminds me of all the conversations we had last year, last season, even the season before that, of one of the issues John Hines struggled with was not knowing the right line combinations and not knowing the right buttons to press. Clearly, Andrew Brunette is ahead of him because what he's doing, the fact that you even just mention the McCarron line in the same breath as the McDavid line is just mind-blowing to me. But I mean, it just shows how effective that line is. That's kind of Andrew Brunette's version of the Hurd line. And I know everyone fell in love with the Hurd line and all that. And Tanner Janot, everyone loved him. But like, I feel like that McCarron line is their role to this team is more important than what the Hurd line was to any of John Hines's teams. Just my opinion.
My takeaway from this is that Connor McDavid is the poor man's Michael McCarron. So I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
That's the point I was trying to make, guys. I'm so glad we're all on the same page on this. The other thing here,
I will point out with McCarron too, he has 20 points this season. 12 of them have come since the beginning of the year. So clearly whatever happened after January, like it's working for him.
So we're just going to, he's just renamed. It's just Michael McDavid. So they're 21-10-3 at home, on the road, which is astonishingly good. 11 games over 500 on the road. They're still 19-15-1 at home, which is still a winning record. During this 15 game stretch, 10 of 44 on the power play. That's about 23%. They're still only 19th in the NHL in that department. Penalty kill has been significantly better. Only 7 of 37. That's 18.9%. They're still 25th in the NHL. So while they look and feel like a top 12-ish team in the NHL right now, their special teams are still a question, but they have been much better during this stretch on both the offensive and defensive sides. And to your point, Emma, you can't always put a number on a particular penalty kill. That certainly they were I mean, guys, they were losing to San Jose at home halfway through the game. Like that's where that was.
Morale was low at that point in Bridgestone Arena last night.
I'd like to take credit for that turnaround because I tweeted that was a game that they should have been winning by a few goals. And then like 2 minutes after I did that, Jason Zucker scored and then all hell broke loose. And then next thing you know, 6 goals later, they're winning 8-2.
Strangely, I did not hear Andrew Brunette say anything about you in the postgame.
I know.
It's kind of odd that he didn't mention you in your tweets.
I feel like Philip Tomasino.
Oh, wow.
The forgotten man.
You're going to get sent back to Milwaukee.
How quickly here, just a side note, how has Bridgestone evolved in y'all's opinion from sort of like they've had now two really incredible stretches of great hockey. They've also had a couple of bad stretches. They were bad at home for a large chunk of the season, but they're now like very clearly a playoff team, if not, you know, 1 week away from kind of not officially clinching, but close to clinching. How have you seen the crowd evolve? Are we starting to see every single seat filled or what's going on?
Kind of. It's getting closer. It's not what we're used to, like sellout 106, whatever it was, straight sellouts, but it's getting closer to capacity. It's still not what it should be, but it's getting there.
Yeah, I think you get there on a weekend game. Those are still pretty packed. The good thing about Bridgestone and the Predators is that they're always going to draw a crowd just because of where they are, like physically where they're located. So, I mean, the fans are passionate. The ones who are there are very passionate, and they definitely, you know, the players have mentioned it too, that once they got the tying goal last night and then, you know, had the go ahead goal, a few of them mentioned that, you know, yeah, the crowd really got into it, and that does make a difference. That fires them up. They can hear everything, and they, you know, whether as much as they might want to think, or you might want to think, oh, they're just focused on the game, they got to block out all the noise, that they don't. I mean, they hear what's going on and they feed off of it. So it's, you know, it is, it does make a difference for these guys. And I think, you know, obviously while they're winning and playing really well, the crowd is responding in kind, and that is, you know, it's kind of, it's helping them win even more.
Well,
I will say a Tuesday game against a 16-win San Jose Sharks team in the middle of March is probably not the best barometer of trying to figure out what the crowd could be. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
I'm starting to notice, though, and this is, it's purely anecdotal, but like having been in the media long enough, you start to, and having lived in Nashville since the 90s, you start to feel it. Like you're starting to get asked more questions in other places. Like that's what's starting to happen with me. It's like somebody's like, oh, what's going on with the Preds? Like people like it's about that time. We're in the spring. It's post spring break. You know, we're almost into April, 13 games to go, playing their best hockey of the entire season. New coach. I would assume that it's just taking longer for fans to get into this particular version of the team. Years of apprehension and sort of like middle ground. You know, it's taken a long time for the team to get this good this season. I still think there should be lower expectations in the playoffs, which I think is also baked into fans' opinions of what's going on. But I'm starting to feel like the text messages hey, my wife's friend's mom is like, hey, are the Preds playing pretty, you know, like that kind of thing where people are starting to talk about it a little bit more. So I think you've got a couple of weeks here where they're going to play really good teams. And if they continue to win at this, not even at this rate, the last seven or eight games of the season, we'll talk about this in a second. They're going to be like, that should be where they pile up points in the last seven or eight games of the season. So we'll get to that in just a second. I want to get to the new guys though, because they both contributed on Tuesday night. Jason Zucker and Anthony Beauvillier, just a fun name to say. I want to know what you guys think they've brought to the table, because they were, I heard you guys talking about it on the episode last week, and I've listened to Gover as well. And it's just like, look, this is depth scoring. You know, some guys that aren't supposed to be top line, bottom six forwards. And of course, they're out there with Colton Sissons on the second line, according to the depth chart, at least. I want to hear what you guys have seen from those guys since being acquired. They both have contributed. They certainly contributed on Tuesday night.
Well, I think, like you said, both the new guys were on the score sheet. They both contributed. I think Jason Zucker in particular has been a really sneaky good pickup for this team. And I think, you know, like you said, he was expected to kind of provide some depth scoring, you know, maybe not be a huge contributor. And granted, he's only been here five games. He hasn't really had time to become a huge contributor. But one thing that I think, and I mentioned this on the show last week, and I think I've even mentioned it before, is that Andrew Brunette's system, like we talked about earlier in the show, it is intense, and it is not easy for guys to pick up on the fly, which did make me a little bit nervous about adding anyone at the trade deadline, because hell, it took the rest of the team 60 games to figure it out. And these guys aren't going to have the luxury of time. So I think it's important. You know, it's more than just a nice anecdote or a nice story that, oh, how nice, Andrew Brunette was an assistant coach in Minnesota when Zucker started his NHL career in Minnesota. And you kind of think like, oh, well, that's nice. That's actually huge for considering what Brunette is doing with this team, and then where Zucker was in his career when he was in Minnesota. I mean, those were his formative years in the NHL, in, you know, pro hockey. And so I think the fact that they have that connection already, and the communication lines are open, you know, it's kind of, it has sped him up to, you know, Bruno doesn't need to get to know him because he already knows him. And so like, he knows what's going to work with this guy. Like he knows like what kind of, you know, constructive feedback to give him, like what kind of tactics are going to work and which ones aren't. And I think that's huge. And then, you know, talking about putting him and Beauvillier on the line with Sissons, I actually asked Zucker about that yesterday before the San Jose game. And because we've talked about this, I've always been a champion of Colton Sissons. I know Braden has too. I think we all have. But I think he is a guy that is really underrated. And so I kind of, earlier in the season, he was playing with Cody Glass. I know that's a hot button issue right now, but I think with he brought out so much in Cody Glass and kind of being a safety net for him and really kind of changing his game. And so to me, it made all the sense in the world that you're going to put the new guys on the line with Sissons, because he's as steady of a steadying force as you can get on this team. And so again, I asked Zucker about him. I said, yeah, you know, he's a pretty underrated defenseman. And this is me saying, or defenseman forward. And then this is me saying this, that I love the guy, but I realize how he's kind of seen in the general public. And Zucker kind of corrected me. He said, well, I think he's underrated in the media, but players know him. Like, everybody know, like, and he said when all the years that he's played against Colton Sissons, he's never been excited to play against this guy. And, you know, he kind of does have a reputation around the league, and he does so many things right. You know, he's not the flashiest guy or player, which is maybe why he goes unnoticed by the media. But I think that that's been big as far as, you know, again, looking at the new guys, yes, but looking at who they've been paired with to play on that second line. And I think that that's been a big part of it. And it, you know, it's not going to be completely linear. It's not going to be perfect. I mean, Zucker, yes, scored the tying goal against San Jose, but he also committed the penalty that led to that kill that they needed to turn the game around. He did redeem himself with the goal, but you know, there are going to be some ups and downs and some bumps there. But I think that he in particular has been a sneaky good ad for this team.
Yeah, I agree with everything Emma just said. And I think Colton Sissons probably was the perfect center to put them with, just because he is someone who I think is kind of underrated. I know we all say he's probably one of the best two-way forwards in the NHL and doesn't really get recognized as such. And I feel like he's someone that, in my opinion, I've covered this guy for 10 years now. Like, in my opinion, he's almost like a second coach on the ice. And it makes sense to put the new guys with him, because if there's someone out there that's going to be able to play the game and also kind of teach the new guys like where to go, what to do, stuff like that, like Colton Sissons is that guy. And I feel like that's just been a great line for them. It technically on the depth chart, it's the second line, but if you go by minutes, it's more like the third or the fourth line.
Yeah.
And I think, like, yeah, I like the additions. I've been more impressed with Zucker than I have been with Bevilier, just because, I mean, Zucker's more noticeable. Bevilier just kind of, he's quiet. He doesn't really make a lot of mistakes, so you don't really notice him. But what I do like about both of them is in the five games they've played with the Predators, Bevilier has 12 shots, Zucker has 15. Like, they're not afraid to put the puck on the net. And that's something that I think Yakov Trenin was maybe a little bit hesitant with, just because he's not really known as a goal scorer. I think that was something that really the Predators struggle with on the third and the fourth line, is sometimes when they're down a goal, when those bottom six lines get thrown out there, there's not a lot of offense coming from those lines. And I know that, you know, that line is technically the second line, but they're playing a similar role to what a bottom six line would do: go out there, be gritty, be physical, yeah, go piss the other team off, stuff like that. So the fact that they have 27 combined shots in five games, on top of what Colton Sissons is doing with the career year he's having, like, that line is going out and it's driving offense. They might not be scoring a bunch of goals here and there, but they're putting the puck on the net. And I think good things are going to happen when you start doing that. And I think that's something I've really noticed with both of them. Yeah, it's probably hard learning Brunette's system on the fly, but you know what? They're still throwing pucks at the net, and that's always a good thing.
I love that I asked you guys about the new players, and we just spent like 5 minutes talking about how great Colton Sissons is, which for me is always fine. I'm always going to be okay with that. You don't like,
but you know what? The best players are the ones who bring out the best in the guys around them. So there you go.
What's interesting, and there's no question that, and this is just, it happens in every sport with, there's different guys that do this, different roles, but like take a defensive zone faceoff on a penalty kill guy is not going to get a lot of love from the media and the press in general. But I guarantee you that every single player on the other team is like worried about that guy. So to your point about how it's like, oh, you go to the rink and you're like, okay, I got to go up against 10 tonight. All right. Even in the offensive zone on the power play, I still got to go up against 10 tonight. Like they know who those guys are. And to your point, it's good to hear somebody from the outside give him some love like that. Cause I think that that makes perfect sense. Like,
I mean, aside from scoring 30 goals a season, name one thing that Colton Sissons doesn't do that another top forward does. I mean, he can forecheck, he can take defensive faceoffs, like he can kill penalties, he can play offense. Like we saw in the Stanley Cup run, like he can play top line center. Like he can do it all. Literally the only thing that that guy doesn't do is put up 30 goals a year.
You, if you are trying to attempt to get me to say something negative about Colton Sissons, you are barking up the wrong tree. It will not.
And he's doing it for like $2.8 million a year, which is one of the biggest steals in the world.
Yep. And again, he's only been here for like 36 years and still just cruising along. He's got 36 more to go on his contract. We do have some negative to discuss, but there's actually good answers to some of these questions. The answer is probably not putting Luke Shen with Roman Josi, but based on text messages and tweets I got on Tuesday night. But the defense, certainly, it turns out, really great that they did not trade Alex Carrier or Tyson Barrie, because as soon as all of that happened, or not happened, I guess didn't happen, Dante Fabbro gets injured 2 to 3 weeks, upper body, should be back for the playoffs. We'll see. Spencer Stastny day-to-day, upper body. And then Jeremy Lauzon, who now probably is unlikely to break the hits record, which he probably would have done, the NHL hits record in a single season. I think he was 50-ish away, give or take, from 56. The record, 56 away. But now he's week to week with the lower body. So Mark Delgaiso gets called up. He's going to be a part of the process now. But now clearly Luke Shen, Tyson Barrie, Alex Carrier, all guys that either you wanted to see traded, could have been traded, maybe you don't want to see getting extra minutes, are now all forced into situations where they need to play some big minutes. So as it turns out, fortunate that they kept all their players. And I know you guys talked about Tyson Barrie kind of getting a bad rap from the fans. I think some of that is the fact that they just haven't played him enough to allow fans to appreciate what he can do. Well, that's off the table now. These guys have to play, and Barrie is certainly capable of filling in for Fabbro for as long as he needs to. Stastny is not necessarily an elite piece, but losing Lauzon and Fabbro, that's two of your top minutes guys, and they've been very healthy for the entire season. And it seems like they'll get healthy for the playoffs, should they make it. So this might be one of those injury windows where you go, all right, I'm okay that it happened now. How worried are we about the defense pairings? And how relieved are we that they didn't trade anybody if you're a Preds fan right now?
Yeah, I think you got to be pretty thankful. I know that everyone was on the trade Alex Carrier train, trade Tyson Barrie train. And I mean, look, this is why the Predators did what they did. This is why they have two NHRA defensemen in the AHL. This is why, like, Barry Trotz, I'm not saying he knew these guys were going to get injured, but this is why that they kept these guys here. And look, Delgaiso stepped in last night, third most ice time of all Preds defensemen. He led the team in penalty kill minutes in his first game since, what, mid-November? First NHL game since mid-November, he fit right in. I would agree, maybe don't play Luke Shen with Roman Josi, but, you know, playing next to Roman Josi, Luke Shen had a +3 rating, which might have been a career high for him. I don't know.
Eight goals.
like I said, Roman Josi, if he doesn't win the Norris Trophy playing next to Luke Shen, carrying him to a +3 rating, I don't know what's going to get him there. But yeah, that pairing looked, I don't know, it looked a little out of sorts to me. But again, as long as Luke Shen's on the ice, fans are always going to have something to complain about. I think if these are the defensive pairings, maybe you get Lauzon back by the time the postseason starts. We don't really know what's up with Stastny. I know Barry Trotz said that if the playoffs started today, like, Lauzon could play. Don't really know what's going on with Stastny. He's week to week, so it's probably a mild injury. Fabbro, he's going to be out probably till the end of the season. So you're going to get at least one, maybe two of those guys back, maybe all three. And like, I think you're okay with the way the defense is right now. You got to figure out what to do with Luke Shen, because in my opinion, he is a liability when he's out there. And that's not to pick on the guy. It's just, he's not a fit for this team or for Andrew Brunette and the way he wants to coach. And I think it's apparent to everybody but Barrie Trotz. I'll let Emma take her victory lap now with Tyson Barrie.
Thank you. No, I also, to go back to your probably career high +3 for Luke Shen, he managed a +3 without a single point. I would like to point that out too. In a game in which they scored 8 goals.
Right place, right time, Emma. Right place, right time.
Look, the other guys who didn't have a point, like Alex Carrier, I think was minus two or something like that. But anyway.
How is it possible to be minus two when your team scores eight goals?
When the other team scores two. And
no, because he was on the ice for the literal two goals that were scored.
Guys, I don't need it to be explained to me like actually how it happens. I know how it actually happens on the score.
Because he let Mikhail Granlund score or skate in uncontested and just score on UC Saros. That's how.
I'm just saying it is statistically almost impossible for 10 goals to have been scored in a game and for you to be on the ice for the only two from the other team. I just feel like that is like the improbability of that is difficult to get my head around. Anyway, sorry to interrupt him.
I'd also like to, you know, I mean, to put it into perspective, there's a guy on San Jose who I literally had never heard of before last night. Who I think ended the game with a minus six. And I'm pretty sure that
yikes.
I saw something where it was Henry Thurn or Thrun.
Henry Thrun,
or
yeah.
Thrun, minus yeah. Six. So and I think that was the worst plus minus by any player in the NHL all season. So
yikes. Jan Rutta was a minus five too.
Yeah, prayers up for Henry Thrun.
It's not good in San Jose, guys. It's not good.
By the way, Luke Shen, just a couple days, games ago, plus three against Winnipeg. Just want to point that out.
Oh,
so plus six. I thought
you were going to say he like just texted you.
No, plus six.
Just
plus
texted six. And said, hey, guys.
I want to remind
stop
you.
Stop being mean. Okay. So, yeah, Ryan McDonough had a plus six last night. I also like to point that out. That was insane, but. Anyway,
so what was the continue interrupting. McDonough played the second best game of any NHL player in the entire league on Tuesday night. I saw that floating around on social media, but I don't know what the metric is, but basically whatever
by
the
plus
NHL
minus standards?
No. Like it's some advanced plus? It's an advanced metric. And basically it was the second best game ever played in the entire season by any human on an NHL team.
Huh.
I'll look it up. Talk about Tyson.
He did have a good game. I mean, he was everywhere. He was all over.
He played a minute and a half on the power play, a minute on the penalty kill, three assists. He was literally everywhere.
He was like up there with Yossi in the being everywhere at the right time category last night. But anyway, yes, Tyson Barry. I need to have my moment here because people have not been nice to me on social media, which I am used to at this point from you people. However, it has become very clear to me, you know, obviously we talk about the injuries to the defense. No one wants to see that, especially when they all happen, you know, within a week of each other. It's a little scary, especially when it's guys like Lausanne, who's having a career year, Stastny, who had only played one game, and then Fabro, who is one of your most reliable and, you know, one of your top minutes guys on the back end. It's hard. And I know that after the whole trade request fiasco, which we discussed at length last week, Michael and I, and basically said, you know, it wasn't Barry, it was his agent. I know the agent is the extension of the player, but whatever. It has become clear to me that through all of that drama, all of that off-ice drama, many of the Preds faithful out there have forgotten that Tyson Barry is in fact a very good defenseman. And all of a sudden, all of this off ice drama has turned him into like, people are talking about him the way we talk about Luke Shen on this show, which is just not fair because Tyson Barry is not a liability. He's not dead weight. He's not making this team worse. He's not dragging this team down. Granted, you know, the team hadn't done him any favors by not playing him. Obviously, now that's not an option anymore. He has to play. But to have a guy like that be your next man up, I mean, he's a veteran in this league. He's got playoff experience. He's got scoring touch. He can play on the power play. I mean, he's the ultimate pro. I mean, that's what Andrew Brunette and everyone has been saying about him through this entire process is that he's handled it like the ultimate pro. You know, he hasn't had an ego. He hasn't had an attitude about, you know, his playing time, anything like that. He's just put his head down and worked. And now he's getting his chance to play. I would also like to point out, and this is where I see, you know, fans clearly having, you know, selective memory about this guy, because remember last year when everyone got hurt or traded and Barry had been here for about 5 minutes because he just arrived at the trade deadline and was suddenly, you know, one of the leaders on this team. I mean, he was wearing an A like a couple games in to being with this team because they didn't have anyone else. He helped carry that team, you know, which was a very inexperienced team, and got them, obviously they didn't make the playoffs last year, but they were, you know, they were very close. It did come down to the last like two games of the season, I think. So I that's my crusade for Tyson Barry. I'm sure I'll be hearing about this, but it makes me sad. This is in the same vein as Cole Smith last year. It makes me sad when fans criticize players for reasons that, I'm sorry, are not valid. Like, if you want to criticize him for requesting a trade, that's one thing, but don't tell me he's a bad defenseman, because he's not. Yeah.
And certainly they're going to be extremely happy and grateful that they have him now. Also, don't send stupid tweets to people that cover the team. Just as a side note, I don't think anyone,
people in general,
I don't think, some people deserve it. I don't think anyone in that's listening to this show and our audience would ever send some rude or crass tweets to you, Emma. Certainly to me, I'm fine with that. I've been dealing with it most of my entire adult life, unfortunately. But you know, if you see somebody around, just tell them not to send stupid tweets.
I can't even imagine what tweet you might be referring to. I think, honestly, though, the one that you are referring to is incredibly tame compared to some of the other ones that I've gotten.
Well, it's actually, it's funny. Like, I know we're joking about people giving you a hard time on Tuesday night, but it's in my brain, it's the culmination of all the ones that I've seen. And it's just like, and you're not also the first person I've seen this done to, nor will you be the last. So let's just act like adults. How about that? I know Twitter's not the place to do that, but whatever. So this is from Hockey Stat Cards. That's right. Hockey Stat Cards. They have top single game game scores for every individual player for the entire season, apparently. And I saw this in the timeline last night, speaking of quality tweets. So the top 10 individual performances of the entire season. You've got names on here, Erik Karlsson. You've got Nikita Kucherov. You've got Connor McDavid on here. Number two game score of the entire season by any human in the NHL. Ryan McDonagh scored a 9.12 on Tuesday night. Roman Josi is sixth in the NHL with a game score 7.86 on Tuesday night. So the two greatest individual performances by a Nashville Predator in the season, according to this metric, came on Tuesday night in the same game, Roman Josi, Ryan McDonagh. You want to know who number one is? I'm asking this for a very specific reason that no one listening is going to know why.
Well, I mean, you told us where McDavid is, so it's got to be Michael McCarron by that standard.
I hope it's Cole Smith.
Number one in the entire NHL for the entire season, the single greatest individual game by any player, Chris Letang, 11.31. And I am asking that for a reason that only we know. So, okay, not worried about the defense corps for now. They cannot take another injury. That is for sure. They've got to stay healthy from here on out, which brings us to the next week. They'll play Florida on Thursday night, 94 points, second place in the division. Detroit, who's fighting for a wild card, of course, 76 points. Vegas, we know, in the second wild card in the Western Conference. They'll play Arizona. Then they're going to play at Colorado and Boston. We know Colorado and Boston, two 90-plus point teams. So basically, five of their next six are against playoff teams. If they can survive this stretch, even at just 500, they will finish with a bunch of teams that are not good. They're just not good. They're not playoff teams. It's Columbus and Chicago, and it's a good, favorable stretch to end the season. So all they really have to do is just sort of hold serve. They don't have to go 13-0-2. They just need to hold serve in these next 2 weeks against really good teams. And if the defense can hold up and Saros can continue to play like he's playing, they can continue to score goals like they are, all they got to do is go like 3-4 over their next 2 weeks, and they can probably finish with enough points to easily make it into the playoffs. So as long as they just don't crumble down the stretch against some good competition over the next 2 weeks, this team should cruise into the postseason. And those are obviously famous last words, but I feel like an 8-point spread is pretty big.
It also helps too that in that stretch you have Vegas, Colorado, Boston, Winnipeg. You already know you can beat Vegas. You already know you can beat Colorado. You already know you can beat Winnipeg. You should have beat Boston early in the year. That one goal game that they lost. Like, you know, you can hang with those teams. I think that's something that's really important to note too, heading into these games. Like, we talked about it last year, like, oh, they needed to win out of the 20 remaining games, like 12 or 13 of them, to get to the playoffs. And they almost did it with a bunch of kids that didn't know any better. This time you have a more veteran team than you did at this point last year. But I think the difference is with that veteran team, like the way they've been playing, like the confidence is higher for this team than it probably has been at this point, any of the last 3-4 years, maybe. So going into those teams, like I do think Florida is kind of a measuring stick game. And I do think Colorado is another measuring stick game. And you can even throw Winnipeg in there. But I do think going into those games, you now have the confidence that you can hang with those teams, whereas you didn't have that a month ago.
Yeah, I think, not to be the downer or the wet blanket here, you said, you know, you can beat those games or beat those teams, but you also know you can lose to them. Because they have lost to Vegas. They have lost to Colorado. They have lost, or not Colorado, they have lost to Winnipeg. And it's, yes, I think this team is a different team now than they were when they did lose to those teams. But it's still, you know, you can't get too hung up on, I mean, hell, they were losing to San Jose at one point. Not to keep beating that dead horse, but it's, you can't let trap games or anything like that. Not saying that Vegas or Boston or Winnipeg would be a trap game, but still, I think it's just important to kind of keep the same focus that you would for any other game. Speaking of Florida being, what'd you say, second place in their division, Does anyone want to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference? Like, genuine question. I was looking at this last night. It is ridiculous. I think if the Preds were in the Eastern Conference, they would. Or if they were in,
it's any of the other, any of the other divisions, like any of them, they'd be a three seed.
Yeah. So anyway, I was looking at the like playoff hunt for the Eastern Conference. It was like, does no one actually wants to make it except maybe the Caps and the Lightning? Everyone else is just like, they keep losing, but they still keep somehow have enough points to still be in the running. And it's just, it's interesting.
They are sixth place in the Western Conference on points. They'd be sixth technically in the Eastern Conference on points, but that'd be 1 point behind Toronto. They would be third place in the Metro Division by a pretty large margin over Philadelphia. So they'd be a three seed there. And of course, if they were in the other division in the Western Conference, they'd be ahead of the Kings by 3 points and in the third place. So we'll save the bitching and moaning over the playoff structure and system for a later date when that actually does affect the team. Cause that's a big deal. Having to play a one seed versus getting that 2-3 matchup. That's a big deal. So otherwise you mentioned trap games, and all I did was look down at the road trip to Arizona. I don't know why my brain did that, but you say trap games and I immediately look at that road trip. I'm just glad it's, like this coming up next week and not the last game of the regular season. I think you're not going to win every game you're supposed to, but you're not going to lose every game you're supposed to. So that's why I just say, like, kind of just play 500 hockey.
Unless you're San Jose.
Right. Just play 500 hockey against these five playoff teams. Like, just go 3-2. Like, you don't have to go 5-0-1 or what. It's just like, play good quality hockey, stay 500, and you have such a quality, like, they have an 8-point lead on Minnesota, which is a crazy thing to say. And they have a 9-point lead over St. Louis. And those are the teams that are out right now. So just don't screw it up, man, is where we're at. And you got a really easy path to the playoff, I think. So
I think that, again, can be dangerous. I mean, the Preds had this, you know, really very unlikely run down the stretch last season. But look, this is off the top of my head, but the teams they were playing towards the end of the year last year, it was Pittsburgh, Boston, Calgary, Minnesota, Colorado. Like, that Colorado game had actually been rescheduled from the flood back in November, which at the time seemed like it could be a benefit because, oh, the playoffs will probably all be figured out by then, but it didn't end up mattering. But it was like they were beating teams that they weren't supposed to. Or at least hanging with teams that they weren't supposed to. I mean, what, they beat Boston, they beat Calgary. Yep. I think they
Seattle.
Seattle, yeah. So it just
Vegas, Carolina.
Yeah. So it's, I think you have to, again, not to beat this cliche into the ground, but you can't let your foot off the gas. You gotta actually just, you know, just put your, keep your head down and
take
play.
Take it one day at a time, one shift at a time.
Yeah, put pucks in deep.
Pucks in deep.
60-minute effort.
Yeah, whole team effort.
110%.
Pulling the same rope.
Yeah. So here's what's funny. I think the over-under on point total for this team was 85.5, I believe, going into the season. So they are one win away, I believe, from the over-hitting. Currently on your gambling app of choice, mine has...
They're 4 points ahead of Tampa Bay. Just keep that in mind. They're 4 points ahead of Tampa Bay.
This is their rebuilding here, Michael, for both teams, actually. So if you go to my particular gambling app, no free shouts. Predators make the playoffs -2,500. Predators miss the playoffs +1,200. You got to lay some steep odds to bet on this team to miss the playoffs. So just want to point that out. I think it's a good place to end it. And again, the over-under, I believe 85.5, they're going to hit the over with one more win. They'll play Florida, Detroit, and Vegas before we talk to you guys next. Just handle your business. Steady as she goes, foot on the gas, 110%, pull in the same direction, give it your all, one step at a time, blah, 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 blah. But honestly, I can't believe I'm sitting here saying, like, just don't screw it up and you are in the playoffs, and it's not even, like, close right now. You're in the playoffs. So it's been a hell of a run, and we'll see what happens moving forward. Michael, where can everybody find you and your work, and what do you got coming up for everybody?
Yeah, find me on Nashville Hockey Now on Twitter at NG Sports _ and the Nashville Hockey Now Twitter at NSH Hockey Now. Like I said, I got a story coming up on Michael McCarron and what he was saying in Brunette too, about how the Predators kind of turned the tide in the third period, and that's become a point of strength for them. And just some more reaction from last night's game. I haven't really dug into it too much, just been really busy, but I will have stuff coming out this week.
And you can find me at the Hockey News. I'm the Predators team site editor over there. And then on Twitter at Emma_Lingen. And then you can also find me, if you feel so inclined, to read about other NHL teams or the occasional MLB team. I'm over at heavy.com writing about baseball and hockey for those guys. So go check it out. As far as Preds content for the Hockey News, I have some game reaction to last night, Roman Josi just being insane. I have a story up this morning about Jason Zucker, kind of a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, actually, with how he's kind of gelled with this team and what's made the transitions so easy for him. I will have stuff coming up. I'll have a story on Beauvillier, kind of hit how his transition has been up to this point. I will have something later on this week about McDonough and, you know, kind of the impact that he's had on this team, as well as just kind of the veteran core in general here and how valuable they are.
There you have it. Check out everybody's work. We do appreciate you guys listening. Enjoy this last couple of weeks of the season here. 13 to go. Should be a great run. Should be fun as well. And obviously, everybody give Emma and Michael a follow. Check out their work as well. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And don't send mean tweets. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.